Minister and the DG, I can see that we do have the A-team ready for our proposed program today. Good morning. I can see the list of participants. It looks like we actually have a representative team. Secretariat?
Chair, yes, we have, Chair, but I'll call members' name for just to confirm their attendance, Chair.
Thank you very much. Please do go ahead, Secretariat.
Chair, Ms. Mutahun?
Honorable Mutahun? Honorable Mutahun? Well, let's continue.
Chair, then we have Ms. Mwatse.
Honorable Mwatse.
Morning, Chairperson, and morning, colleagues. I'm present.
Thank you very much.
Chair.
Welcome.
Mrs. Hermans, Chair.
Honorable
morning,
Hermans.
Chair. Morning, members of the portfolio committee.
Mr.
Thank
Mulder,
you very
Chair.
Much.
Good morning,
yes.
Chair. Good morning, everyone.
Welcome. Thank you. Good morning, Honorable Mulder.
Mr. Kalfas, Chair.
Honorable Kalfas.
Morning, Chairperson. I'm present.
Good morning. Welcome.
Mr. Thrin, Chair.
Good morning, members. Good morning, Chair. Morning, members, colleagues.
Thank you very much. Welcome.
Mr. McPherson, Chair.
Honorable McPherson.
Good morning, I'm here, thanks.
Thank you, welcome.
Mr. Mbuyani, Chair.
Honorable Mbuyani.
Morning, Chairperson, morning, colleagues, I'm present, thank you.
Thank you, welcome.
Then we have Mr. Burns Makashe, Chair.
Well, we do actually have our member who's actually just joining us. I think there was actually also communication in the past week with Honorable Lonsele. So the member, Honorable Namashe, is the member that will be joining us. And I think for all of us, it's in the replacement of Honorable Mantashe. Let's welcome Honorable Namashe, and thanks very much for joining. I'm sure we'll be able to have time to hear your voice, Honorable Namashe. Welcome. So I think it's a correction of what we reported in the past week. Thank you very much, Secretariat. We welcome Mr. Honorable Namashe.
Chair, just to reflect that the new name will only reflect once the name is ATC. It has not formally been ATC yet. So the name will not be on today's agenda. So, Ms. Yaku, Chair.
Okay. Honorable Yaku.
I'm present, Chair.
Thank you very much. Welcome.
We have a full member, full all members. I'm
also present, Mudo.
Now you were number one, Honorable Mudawu. You were the first one I called out. You were number one. You were the first person I called out. But thanks very much. We were just about to check of your connectivity. Welcome, Honorable Mudawu. Thank you very much.
Chair,
network challenges.
Okay. Now, thank you very much, Honorable Mutahun.
Thank you.
You can actually link up with the Secretariat if there are challenges. I can hear that the connectivity is not the best we can have, but I'm sure you can actually just call the Secretariat if ever there are challenges so that we are aware that we don't lock you out as well. Thank you very much, Honorable Mutahun. Secretariat?
Chair, we will flag the agenda, Chair.
Yes. Let's actually then have the agenda. Honorable members, I think what we have before us, we have actually opened our meeting today. And everyone is welcome because we do actually have a representative team of honorable members. We should, our meeting is constituted in a way that we can proceed with the agenda. Do you have any apologies, Secretariat? No apologies.
I received an apology for that was just been submitted to the committee of the minister not able to attend this morning's session because he is attending an NCCC meeting and a special cabinet meeting, Chair.
Okay. No, that's fine. Then let's actually look at the adoption of the agenda. I think we have only one item. It's actually the briefing by the DTIC on the status of implementation of the completed master plans, as well as the outstanding master plan. So I think we're actually looking at master plans today. On the program that we adopted, this is the item that we agreed we are going to be able to consider today. Let me just get the meeting if ever we can be able to proceed. Can I have the adoption of the agenda as presented to you, honorable members?
Proposed adoption, Chair.
Mrs. Hammonds, Chair. Honourable Hammonds, move for the adoption of the agenda.
Ms. Mutahung, Chair.
And Honourable Mutahung.
Thank you, Chair. I second the adoption of the agenda.
And the Honourable Mutahung second. Do we have any objections? So in the absence, can we then actually agree that we'll proceed on the agenda as we have before us? The main item today's presentation is the master plans. Let me actually welcome our Deputy Minister Majola. We do actually have our DG as well as part of the team. Let me invite the Deputy Minister Majola to actually talk to us and be able to actually then get the presentation done. Deputy Minister, welcome. Can I invite you to actually greet us and speak to what we actually have to look at? I'm sure we'll be able to have the DG and the entire team being able to actually participate as expected. Honorable Deputy Minister Majola.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee. Honorable Duma, honorable members of the committee, good morning. Good morning to the Director General, the DDG, and the rest of the team of the DTIC, the parliamentary support staff. Honorable members, as indicated by the Chair, today the DTIC will present to the committee an update on the implementation of the master plans. So basically what we will do, we will have an update since the 27th of October last year of the presentation that was done by the minister to get an update on the four master plans that have been completed, focusing mainly on the new things that have come up since the last year. Presentation to the Portfolio Committee. We will also give an outline of where we are with regard to the completion of the two master plans that we're working on that are nearing completion. So that should be the totality of the presentation, Chairperson. So with your permission, I will hand over to the DG. We also have the DG Pele in the meeting. So with your permission, Chairperson, over to the Director General of the Department, DG October.
Thank you very much. Good morning, DM, Deputy Minister. DG, I'm sure you'll be able to just introduce your team and actually take us in the introductory part of the program. And I'm sure the focus, as we have, is on the master plans in today's meeting. DG?
Inkosi kakhulu, Chair. The presentation will be done by Thandi Pele, who's the Deputy Director General, and then Zukiswa Kimani will also support that.
Chair, just by way of context, as you know, the master plan is a tool of industrial plans that have been extensively used in Asia in their industrialization. So in our context, the master plan is developed both by government, but we also a central role for private sector and trade unions. So it's a social compact. Chair, in broad terms, and Thandi will spell out the details to you, in broad terms, the four master plans have been completed and is fully operational, and we are currently engaged in two further master plans, the steel and furniture master plan, and that will be completed in the next few weeks, but we are currently engaged in intense negotiations with the different players. Chair, in general, the master plans are working very well, and you will see that there are successes in the clothing and textile and leather footwear, especially in footwear, where we've seen the growth of the revival of the footwear sector in KZN. We've also seen progress in sugar. It has been stabilized, and there's big opportunities, improvement in the poultry sector with millions more chickens being produced, and we've been able to cut down on the imports. And then in autos, as you well know, all of there's been big investment. The 10 billion in Imonte by Mercedes-Benz is nearing completion, and the president will launch the new C-Class manufacturing plant in Imonte. And then, as you know, we've just announced the 16 billion by Ford, and there are many others, and so on. So, Chair, I'll hand over to Thandi Bhele. Thanks.
Thank you very much, DG. DG, I'm sure we can actually then invite you to take us through the presentation. Welcome, DG Bhele.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Good morning, Honorable Members. And good morning, the colleagues. As the DG and the DM had already indicated, we are here, a full team of the DTI that is responsible for the different master plans that we are leading together with the private sector and labor to implement. So we have got a very full room today. They are here to hear the debate from the committee itself and also to assist in responding to some of the technical questions that may come from the floor. I would request the Chair that be permitted, if it's necessary, when we get to that point of the discussion. I will lead the presentation myself. I will do the entire presentation, and the DG and the DM, I guess I do the easy job of doing the presentation, and the DG and the DM do the difficult part about answering the questions. I'm trying to find the screen to share. I don't know if it's visible.
It's visible.
No, we can see it now.
We can see it now. Okay.
Yes. Yes.
So, thanks, Chair. As the DG had already outlined, that we came to the committee with the minister on the 27th of October 2020, sorry for the typo in the presentation, where the minister tabled a very comprehensive report on the master plans and how we are evolving in the implementation. In the last report, I think we have really demonstrated the impact of those master plans across the economy and how as the department we are reconstructing ourselves to really give effect to the economic recovery plan. I think the point that DG has already underscored, the significance of social compacting as a methodology to developing the master plan and the reciprocal commitments that are coming from all the social partners in order to assist all of us to realize our economic objectives, and mainly so how do we promote new investments, sustain production capabilities and job creation going forward. So I think by way of context, this presentation really builds on that previous progress report that the Minister had provided to Parliament. We will highlight the new implementation or achievements made since the last reporting. And it's also a recap on how we have cumulatively achieved the certain milestones as in the financial year, and re-emphasize the context in which the master plans are developed and are taking place. So the presentation, Chair, if you allow myself, I will emphasize more on the new activities that have happened since the 27th of October, so that we don't repeat what the Minister has already outlined in the previous report. And secondly, Chair, that we actually spend more time also demonstrating the nuances that are coming out of our productive sectors as we are continue to sharpen our instruments to assist them to really be able to cope with the pandemic effects, as well as to also begin to reconstruct themselves in order to meaningfully contribute towards the economic recovery plan. So I will spend more time on the newer things rather than the repeating the older stuff, if Chair may allow that.
Go ahead, DDA. Thanks.
So I think this point we've already made in the past, that we launched the Reimagine Industrial Strategy, which placed industrialization at the core of economic policy in this sixth administration. The Reimagine Industrial Strategy re-emphasizes the role of the state in creating that enabling environment to allow the private sector to assist us to actually develop capabilities and capacity and promote jobs. I think in the economy reconstruction and recovery plan, the greater emphasis in there is the role of the DTI that has been heightened around the increase of localization and reindustrialization and growth. I guess the underscoring point is that we have to really play a meaningful role in really promoting the productive sectors in the economy. So I will pass through the older slides, but I think for context purpose, I think that it's important we talk a bit about this slide, that today, as the Chair has already indicated, that we have completed four master plans. The first two really are important for us for food security and rural development, which is sugar and poultry. The retail clothing, textiles, leather and footwear master plan is important for labor intensity. And given that the sector is one of the sectors that predominantly employing women, and we've got an opportunity to really entrench women empowerment and entrepreneurship in the sector. The other one is the automotive one, automotive and component master plan, which is a key NL foreign exchange for South Africa and a platform for advanced manufacturing. And I think the point about advanced manufacturing, we will see this. I talk through the other slides in the presentation, that we also have to evolve in our development of capabilities to be able to respond to future opportunities. I think what is really underscoring our master plan is the issue of reciprocal commitment by all social partners. In really ensuring that we are successful in implementing the master plan. Reciprocal commitments, we mean, as the minister would call it, is a bring and buy. All of us as government, business and labor, we have to bring something into the party in order to ensure that we are able to underscore the development of the sectors. The focus of the master plan, I think the common thread across all of them is increased focus on localization, development and integration of SMEs into the mainstream economy, and also to contribute towards an informal economy. Implementation of the four that we have developed to date and have been approved is currently underway, and we will show the new things that we have done since October. And in the financial year before it ends, by March, we are intending to finalize the steel and metal fabricating and the furniture master plan. I think by way of recapping, of the four master plans that have been approved, we have got a commitment of about 70 billion across the four master plans, commitments that have come through the master plan process itself, and some of the commitments that have come through the investment conference that we have held, the two consecutive ones that we have held since we have introduced the concept of social compacting. So in terms of clothing, textiles and leather and footwear, I think maybe to recap in terms of context, the purpose focused on the or the main thrust of the master plan is that we want to grow local procurement from the current levels of about 44% to 65%, which means the retailers have to really play a greater role in onshoring new products and volumes to the local manufacturing sector. We are working intensively with SARS and the enforcement agencies to combat the issues of illegal and illicit imports. We have the longest time had an incentive program that we have provided to the sector. In the first evolution of the incentive was more to stabilize the sector. Going forward, we want to see more of a growth program and coupled with that also to see more transformation being embedded into how we are providing support to the industry and to really reorientate the incentive to align to the objectives of the master plan and anchor the implementation thereof. The fourth point is the issue about strategic use of the rebates and tariffs, and I think in the slides to follow, we will demonstrate how as collective social partners we have been able to really come to the table, find consensus on the most difficult conversation on rebates and the importance of that in ensuring that we are able to really support greater local manufacturing of finished garments. Obviously, I've spoken a lot about entrenching transformation across all the master plans and ensuring that there is cohesiveness in our value chains and our supply chains going forward. In terms of the new progress, and I think the new progress for us, I think we need to also take it into account that we are doing this during the period where it was a festive season in South Africa, so the December month and the January month has been a little bit of a difficulty because of the nature of how our economy is structured around those months, but we have really been able to achieve a lot even in that with the festive season being embedded into the reporting program that we are talking about. The first one, I think previously we had spoken about the plans for PEPCO to bring a new factory to produce footwear. That new factory is the first phase of it. It's now operational since January 2021. We've been able to save 40 jobs and created 42 new jobs in the process. We've also assisted the factory to also look at production of surgical gowns, especially in the current environment where we are also trying to repurpose the industry to assist us to deal with the COVID pandemic. Through that process, they've been able to be approved by SAPRA, so therefore they are able to really provide the surgical grounds into the public and the private health system. We have continued the engagement with business, labor, and the IDC and around how do we repurpose the incentive program, and I've already alluded to this in the introduction, that want to reorientate it to align it to what is coming out of the master plan and also ensure that we begin to embed the transformation obligations going forward. The third point is that we have also seen new retailers also beginning to show interest into the master plan. Cape Union Mart and Cotton On South Africa are in the process of joining the federation, the Clothing and Retail Federation, and with that comes with the commitment of them to also to contribute and commit to the master plan implementation. We continue to have positive engagements and discussions with the foreign retailers to join the master plan itself, and also to begin to also assist us to really increase aggregate demand for our manufacturers. Bullet point number five, I think we have spoken about it previously, but we continue to really partner with business and labor to continue to unlock production challenges and ensuring that the factories that we have are able to meet the demand, especially in products that are important for us to fight the COVID pandemic. But in the similar vein, I think one of the things that has happened recently has this, we have done a lot of work with the AU to begin to really onboard the South African companies on the AU portal, working with our FDR offices to find new offshore markets for our PPE products as we move forward. Bullet point number six, you would have seen that in November, December, there was a heightened local, buy local campaigns by the retailers and also supporting local brands in their own stores. There was a lot of media coverage on this point, and I think it was important for us to actually do this so that we begin to really demonstrate and sharpen our message across the society around the importance of localization and the externalities that comes with us actually implementing more of local content kind of products. On combating illegal imports, the few things that have happened in the recent times is that one, a focused team of with SARS and the enforcement agencies has been institutionalized since the beginning of February in order to really sharpen our instruments around on enforcement and how do we deal with operations in terms of under invoicing and misdeclaration. A senior manager has been appointed through the SARS to really heighten the focus on city deep operations and inspections and to support the national rapid response team. As you know, globally, there's a number of methods that have been utilized to really do evaluation of one prices in order to show that we also are able to deal decisively with the issues about under invoicing. And I think SARS has really taken on board this point about developing a very dedicated evaluation database project. And a team has been assembled to look at a business case to find resources to really support that and to draft a project plan going forward. I think for this point, I think it's important to underscore it that we are one of the difficulties with the in the clothing and textiles and leather and footwear sector is the correct pricing across the entire value chain and supply chain. So the evaluation database project would really assist us to really see where are the areas of under invoicing and how do we really work with staff to actually eliminate and eradicate the under invoicing. The eighth bullet point, I think, is the point that I was making around the usage of the rebate system. I think for the longest time we have had the tug of war in the supply chain around where the areas where actually duties or rebates are needed or duties must be removed in order to support the localization of final garments. And I think after extensive, very intensive consultation with business and labor, we were able to really finally find consensus on how do we best make use of the rebate on particularly on textiles and yarn. We have from the 5th of February that has been approved and is in implementation. That means that any yarn and fabrics under this rebate system can be imported under specific conditions as laid out by ITEC in a very phased approach so that we don't also undermine the limited capabilities that we have in textiles manufacturing and yarn manufacturing in the country. So it's the nuances that we have to bring as we are implementing the master plan that bringing and sharpening these industrial policy tools requires extensive consultation so that we are able to find one another with the stakeholders and the implementation thereof, it doesn't undermine any kind of capabilities and capacities that we have in the value chain. This is the old information that we have presented. The point just to re-emphasize that the retail group continues to really support the buy local campaign, and as I've indicated, for us to move to the 65% local content, it requires a lot of effort from the retailers, and I think incrementally, every time when we meet with them, there's really a percentage change in how they are really beginning to ensure or onshore new products onto the South African manufacturing program. I think there's also the previous points that we had made. I don't think I'm going to go into them. Safe to say that under the incentive itself, we had already introduced an interest makeup scheme to assist the industry with working capital needs, especially as a short-term measure as we are finding difficulties with working capital requirements and actions to really mitigate the consequences of the COVID-19, so that window of the incentive is open currently, and the industry is really making an effort to apply, and we are also sharpening our adjudication process to make sure that we are timely in how we are providing support to the industry. These points we have made previously demonstrating where have we been able to localize. I don't think I will go into those ones. In poultry master plan, I think maybe to recap what we are trying to achieve in here, the master plan has got 5 pillars to it. One is to expand our production with very clear targets up to 2023. We want to improve the consumption of locally produced chickens and also drive exports of chicken meat, and also in some instances also increase our value addition in our poultry sector. We have also the issue about the illegal imports and also finding the right architecture on our trade instruments to make sure that we are able to provide sufficient protection to the industry, but at the same time that we don't also do a price effect on the consumer. As you know, poultry still remains one of the key sources of protein for the middle class and the lower class. So therefore, it's important that as we are supporting the industry from a productive side perspective, we are also cognizant of issues about pricing and ensuring that the market is still is able to really afford as part of the normal food basket. The 3 points that are new in this master plan is that we have seen an incremental investment on as promised by SAPA in the period under review. The incremental investments are about 365 million, which cumulatively says to date we have already the industry has already invested 1.1 billion against the targeted investment of 1.7. Obviously, 1.7 is a target over the duration and the implementation of the master plan. So we will improve the investment as we implement going forward. I'm not sure if the screen is visible or must I increase it. I just got a message to say probably it's a little bit too small. Is it better?
Can we not put it on full screen?
Yes.
I'm not sure where's the full screen. Can I proceed while I also try to find the technicality around the screen? In the interest of time, I think in terms of transformation, as we would recall, that as part of the master plan process, the SAPA, as the biggest association, had committed to really supporting 50 new growers. To date, 13 with contract growers are in operational and have been fully supported by SAPA. So it's going to be an incremental approach until we get to the point where we are able to achieve what we have been committed in the master plan, but we are hoping that we are also able to exceed where it's possible. I think the last point on this slide on capacity development, I think for us it's an important point to make that as we integrate new growers into the value chain, it's important that we also assist them on the issues around standards and ensuring that as we are also driving a bigger export program, especially into markets such as the EU, we are able to also ensure that we are able to meet our biodiversity requirements and be able to meet the food security and the phytosanitary standards. So SAPRA has created a new program under capacity development to really assist the emerging growing farmers to ensure that they are able to meet the technical requirements in the production. This point we had previously made, I don't think I will go into them. It's the last progress that was provided by the minister previously. So I will move from there and get into the next one on sugar. Points to make to maybe recap the importance of the sugar industry and why the importance of the master plan. This is one of the industries that has got potential to really assist us to deal with rural development issues. We have had also a number of emerging black growers that have really have been integrated into the SASA structures, and I think the admission of SAFDA as an emerging industry association representing more of the black growers has been a very important point, that we are able to also drive transformation within the SASA structures and be able to also dedicate some programs to actually ensure that we are able to embed transformation. So the points that maybe the pillars of the master plan, maybe let's recap on those ones, that we want to restore our local markets and also to work with the with the users of sugar for off-take commitments. As you know, we know that there's been issues around the sugar tax and the need for some transition to assist the industry, that as we are looking for these new ways of health, new health living, that we are also assisting the industry to transition into new markets going forward. Obviously, the long-term sustainability of the sector is in the diversification, but in the diversification both on the energy and the fuel side is going to take a little bit of time. These projects are always very long-term.
DGG, are you still there? I'm not sure if you muted, because I can't hear it. I see the screen.
Chair, it appears she's frozen, Chair.
Okay. Let me actually just ask DG to check, because I think Secretary, if you can just see if she's frozen, then we can ask the DG to actually pick up. But not disconnected.
Yes, maybe if I can ask, Chair.
Okay. Yes. I see Zulu connecting. And then maybe DG is actually already linking up.
If I could hand over to Zukiswa to
okay.
Maybe continue. Zukiswa?
Okay, thank you, DJ.
Yeah.
Okay, sir.
Apologies, Honorable Chair. I think I have
oh.
Had a connection problem. I think I'm back now. Am I audible?
Yeah, no, we're trying to set up an alternative. Thank you very much for coming back. We can actually proceed, DJ.
Okay. Then thank
yeah.
you, Chair. I think, Tulu, can you go to the next slide? The next one? Okay, yes. I think three developments that have happened since our last report to the committee. One is that the Sugar Master Plan has officially been signed off by the social partners on the 16th of November. Working groups in the different pillars of the master plan have been constituted. We have also had a first oversight meeting on how we're going to really monitor and implement the commitments that are coming out of the master plan. The point that I want to just emphasize on point number two, I think the SASA structure itself is beginning to also see the value of the social compacting, that there's been really a substantial increase in the local sales comparing what was projected for this financial year and what they have been able to report on. Comparing to the previous season, I think the sales, they are seeing that the direct market sales are going to be ahead by more than 50,000 tons. Which is really significant. So that means the offtake arrangements that we have had with the industrial users are really beginning to have this impact to the industry, and also assisting the millers and the cane growers in particular to be able to really produce more of sugar. Let's move to the next slide, Solo. These were the old reports that the minister has given. Safe to say that on the bullet point number four, the issue around the billion rand being set aside to support the industry transformation, I think SASA is really trying to make really greater strides on that one. We have also partnered with Department of Rural Development and Agriculture that is also providing a lot of support on to the black sugarcane growers. As we would recall that the biofuels regulation framework was approved by our sister department, DMRE, at the beginning of last year. I think implementation is starting to take traction, but I think we will leave the details for a better report in the next meeting once we have had an engagement with our sister department, DMRE, on this matter. The next slide. So that is just the media coverages that we have had on the sugar automotive. Next slide, Solo. Okay. I think just to, as I've done, to recap on what are the objectives of the master plan. One is that we want to double our vehicle production from the current values of around 600,000 units to 1.2. With that, it will increase our global presence to at least 1%. By 2035, and I think it's important we always understand what does the 2035 mean for us. It takes 7 years for a model to be reintroduced with a different facelift in the process. So 2035, at the time of beginning the implementation of the master plan, would have given us an opportunity to produce at least two models that can really enable us to invest some of the bigger and the important policy levers that we have on the table. One of them being that we want to increase local content and procurement of components in the locally assembled vehicles from the current figures of about 38% to 60%. The industry has also committed to a transformation program which would really ensure that the tier 2, tier 3 components are also supported in the process. We want to deepen value addition across the different components and the technologies. And I think the point here also to make is that we also need to evolve in our policy making, that as the world is moving more into the hybrids and into the electric vehicles, that we begin to also introduce those nuances into our master plan to ensure that we are also able to leverage on the new technologies going forward and identify niches within the different technologies that are going to be introduced that can also be localized given the mineral endowment that we have. That's the easier one is always the batteries in relation to the EVs. The next slide, follow. Okay, we have had a number of areas, new areas that we have implemented, or successes that we have also announced. The first one being the launch of the 20 SEZ Auto Hub by the President at the beginning of February, 16 billion investment, which is the biggest investment that Ford has ever made since their existence in South Africa. It will assist the OEM to produce all new generations of the Ranger trucks, and also to also help them to also increase volumes going forward. The transformation program, previously we had reported that the OEMs have begun to sign on to the transformation fund and make the deposit. The implementation of the fund itself has begun being operational from January, identifying new areas of where we're going to actually support the transformation, both on a component side and also who are the beneficiaries of that program going forward. The third one on the export promotion, as we know that on the continent there's a number of countries that have also identified the need to also build assembly lines in their own country, so that we don't miss an opportunity for us and also begin to also integrate the value chain. We have promulgated support under the APDP, that CKD, what we know, semi-knockdown kits that are produced in South Africa, can also get similar benefits under the APDP for kits that are being exported to the continent. And for me, this is an important point to make, that as we also begin to look at the continental free trade area, what are the programs that we can really bring onshore that one can demonstrate the integrations of the value chains and the supply chains, where can we work together with our counterparts on the continent to ensure that we are able to industrialize as a collective going forward. On the issue of localization and policy certainty, we have published the regulations that says the APDP Phase 2 will be implemented from the 1st of July 2021. As the committee would recall, when the master plan was approved in 2018, we had indicated that the new APDP benefits must kick in from the 1st of January 2021, but we had to adjust given the effects of the pandemic on the industry, on the sales, and so forth. So we then had to go back to the drawing board with our social partners to look at what is really possible going forward. We then agreed to at least shift the implementation of the new scheme or the architecture of the support program from the 1st of January to the 1st of July. So it gives the industry to readjust. In terms of the localization strategy, I think the OEMs have also begun to look at what are the common things or common products that they can be able to localize as a collective, so that we also provide scale to the tier 1, tier 2, tier 3 suppliers going forward. And for me, bullet point number 4 in relation to the localization strategy and the transformation program goes hand in hand, that transformation must really happen within the core of the supply chain, so that we are able to develop new black industrialists and be able to also participate in the key value chains and supply chains going forward. Next slide, Solo. Okay. On the custom issues, as we know, as part of the broader architecture of the APDP, imports of second-hand vehicles are not really allowed in the country, and this is what has allowed the assembly lines to really increase volumes systematically since we have introduced the different version of the automotive program. We have formed a task team together with the enforcement agencies and SARS to look at how do we deal with the issues of grey imports that are coming into the country, and also the issues around pricing and the effects of that on our markets going forward. On the infrastructure side, we have signed an agreement with Transnet to jointly do a benchmarking study on the port and rail charges and availability to ensure that we are able to reduce the cost of logistics in relation to this sector itself. And I think for the inland plants such as Nissan and Ford, for the new product lines that they want to onshore, it's important that as we increase production, our infrastructure also has been infrastructure development is also taken into account to ensure that we are able to also provide additional rolling stock, for example, to move more additional products to the export market. On climate compatibility, and I think I've already alluded to this point around the evolution to the electric vehicles. Safe to say that the OEMs, some of the OEMs are already producing the hybrids in the country, such as Mercedes-Benz. And you would recall that Toyota had also made a big announcement that in the new generation of the Toyota a hybrid model, and that investment is expected, or the production is expected from the beginning of October 2021. So I think the results of the study would really assist us to make key considerations around what is important for South Africa in the short, medium, and long term, and how do we actually evolve in our production processes to bring in new of the technologies going forward. The next slide, Tulu. I think this is all information that we had shared with the committee. We can move. Okay. In terms of the conclusion and the next steps, I think the point that we will continue to emphasize, and I think is fully even recognized in the economic recovery plan, that master plans are very key for us to really develop social compact with business and labor, where each partner, government, business, labor, brings something to the table. We are trying to move away from the old notion of the state-centric approach to a model of more a partnership and collaboration with business and labor. I think the effects of the pandemic has really demonstrated the fragility of the global supply chain and the disruptions that came with the pandemic itself, which for us, I think, it really re-emphasized and underscores the rationale for an increased effort on localization to ensure that we do have systematic supply chains that we are able to support our bigger sectors and be able to really develop and integrate SMEs and the black industrialists into the key value chains going forward. I think in the current fiscal constraints, I think we need to sharpen our non-financial instruments. And you would know and notice that for the different sectors, actually sometimes the non-financial support instruments are far, it can take the industry far, much fairer than only just providing the financial support. Although we continue with the DG and the DM and the minister to fight with National Treasury to keep at least our baseline in order to really continue to support the industry going forward. But I think within the ambit of the instruments that we have on industrial policy, there are a number of non-financial ones that we can really do better and sharpen to actually provide better support to the industry. So in the next 2 months, we will finalizing the steel and metal fabrication master plan and the furniture master plan. To date, we have not really spoken a lot about those, what is coming out of those master plans, because both of them are in really final and critical stages of stakeholder engagement, consultation, and negotiations. So I think it might have been a bit premature to talk about what is coming out while we are still on the table to negotiate the final architecture of this master plan. Safe to say that indeed the research part of it to support the arguments of the master plans have been completed. So we are sharpening what could be the priorities going forward, the commitments thereof, and the instruments that we're going to be utilizing to really implement the master plans. The implementation of the existing master plans that have been approved and the monitoring thereof will continue, and we'll appraise the committee as and when we've got new information on the various master plans to report on. I think a common message that we are also assisting the committee to also help us with is the issue around how do we deepen localization efforts across all master plans. In some areas, actually, government and government procurement can really play a greater role, and therefore we really need the committee to keep on advocating the message with our sister departments, our spheres of government, on the importance of really the bi-local issues. We will continue to make the adjustments on our instruments and our not so much the objectives, because I think the objectives will remain the same, but adjustments in terms of the programs, the instruments, take into account the effects of COVID, as I've already demonstrated on how we have dealt with it under the automotive program, and also what is coming out of the economic reconstruction and recovery plan. So we are very agile in our processes. We are engaging on a daily basis with the social partners to make sure that the master plans are as relevant and are as responsive to the industry needs as much as possible. And government continues to play that enabling role to enable us to actually give the good support and the great support to the industry. This is my last slide, Chair. Thank you for the opportunity, and thank you for the members for allowing the department to come and appraise the committee on the progress that we have made to date. Thanks.
Thank you, DDG. I will actually then ask that we secretary check the members who would like to actually comment, ask questions, or in terms of the presentation that we have before us. Let me just check if ever there are members who want to comment or ask questions. Secretary can assist with that.
Chair, Mr. Thring, Chair, followed by Mr. McPherson at the moment, Chair, followed by Ms. Yaku and Mr. Cuthbert.
So it's Thring,
McPherson, Ms. Yaku and Mr. Cuthbert at the moment.
Yaku and Cuthbert. Thank you very much. In that order, Honorable Thring.
Thank you, Chair. Let me firstly appreciate the presentation and also the progress that has been made in terms of the master plans. I think we're certainly looking forward to see an increase in the number of master plans across the sector, so that we could look at driving our industrial base. Some of my questions, maybe two or three questions, is it is understandable also that to a large extent your small, medium, micro enterprises are the backbones of many of your countries and the industrial development, particularly in the first world countries. So what progress is in terms of supporting your SMMEs in terms of becoming a part of the industrial landscape in South Africa? I think secondly, the ACDP has spoken largely with regards to localization and beneficiation, and so I see that there's in the presentations talk of localization, which is positive, particularly in the clothing, textile, leather industry, and I think that that's positive because there's lots of development that has been made. But within the other sectors, particularly, and this is, leads me now to mining and intergovernmental relationships. One of the challenges that we have with regards to mining is that we have some of the largest untapped mineral reserves in the world. Some estimate between, you know, some $3 to $5 trillion, not even rand, dollars, of untapped reserves. And then also there's the Africa landscape as well, potential countries to move into Africa in terms of the Africa Free Trade Agreement that we are looking at implementing. So what moves are there afoot to tap into and the intergovernmental relationships to look at utilizing the resources that we have for the benefit of ordinary South Africans? Thank you, Chair.
Can we take Honorable Matsiesa?
Thank you very much. I just want to start off with the first line in your presentation that concerns me a bit when you say that social compacting is a methodology master plans. Now, I would have thought that the methodology for master plans would have been about things like inclusive growth, would have been about job creation, would have been about competitiveness, would have been about lowering the cost to consumers, and the many other more important things than social compacting as being the cornerstone of master plan methodology. So I would just like to, for the presenter, to clarify that point, whether in fact that is true or maybe they omitted all of those other important things. Because the truth of the matter is that social compacting benefits one group of people only, and that is big business, because they are the only people at the table that government does so-called social compacting with. It's only people who belong to bargaining councils, who belong to NEDLAC, that the government actually speaks to, and that is their idea of social compacting. And small businesses, SMMEs, quite frankly, have no place in social compacting. And that's what's been proven today. So I really think that the foundation and the ideological foundation of these master plans needs to be clarified. What the presenter didn't speak to is that you talk about master plans as they are a panacea and a silver bullet to deindustrialization. So you talk about master plans as the turnaround for industrialization through localization. But what does the cost increases in price through localization, because more times than not, local products are more expensive due to uncompetitiveness, due to input costs from things like Eskom. What does that do to cost price increases for consumers and to headline inflation? I would like to know what model has master plans, what is the modeling done to look at those two important price increases for consumers. On the clothing master plan, I think that the biggest headache that exists for clothing companies is around the rebate system, because you need to have a PhD to actually understand the rebate system due to its extreme complexity. And then saying, well, that's not our problem, it's someone else's problem. But actually, it is the DTI's problem if they're putting so much on the line. So what is the department doing around the complexities of the rebate system? And what is the department doing around the continued flood of illegal imports into this country? And customs continues to sit on its hands and does very little. It's even worse than that when last year I raised the tremendous opportunity that existed around hospital sheeting, bed gowns, and so on and so forth. But unless something was done, then they were going to flood into the country and decimate local production. Well, unfortunately, the DTI chose to do nothing about it, and that realization has come true. On the poultry master plan, what is the mechanism that the DTI has with poultry producers who are all, the big ones are JSE listed, multi-billion rand profit generating machines. What is the DTI doing to improve their competitiveness? Because that's actually the bottom line with why local poultry producers cannot compete with international markets, is because they're just so uncompetitive and they refuse to do anything about it, choosing rather to, you know, put things like, you know, profits towards shareholders through dividends, because that's what big businesses do. And what has the DTI done to expand market access for poultry producers into international markets? Because we've had this discussion many times, DG, and in fact, the DTI does nothing in export promotion with respect to white meat, which can fetch double the price in European markets than it does in South African markets, but there's just no assistance on that. The other big problem that poultry producers face is the complete dysfunctionality of ANC-run municipalities where these plants exist. The water doesn't work, the electricity doesn't work, the roads are, they have potholes in the potholes, and nothing ever gets done about these dysfunctional ANC municipalities, and over again we see poultry producers continuously raise the dysfunctionality of these municipalities, and yet nothing gets done, and we're just simply told, well, you know, that's COGTA's problem to deal with, not ours. And then lastly, on the auto master plan, you will know that the UK will stop selling fuel consuming, that's both gas and, so at least petrol and diesel cars, I think it's in 2024. Now, I would hazard a guess that a large number of the vehicles that we produce in this country go to the UK market, because it is a right-hand market. So what is the thinking behind the master plan losing potentially one of, if not its biggest customer going forward? Thank you.
Can we ask the Honorable Yako?
Thank you very much, Chair. I think after all that, there's nothing really much to say. I've been covered by a lot of the questions. However, I am curious as to what deadlines is the department giving us in terms of when we'll start seeing results. And I think we need to really be results orientated at the moment, because we've heard so much about these master plans since we started in the sixth parliament. However, we have not really seen much improvement in some of these industries. And all of the excuses covered, but also the DG last meeting said that they project an increase or an improvement in the economy of South Africa. So I think if there will be an increase in the economy of South Africa, then there needs to be an improvement within the departments that we've spoken about now. Thank you very much, Chair.
Can we ask Honorable Cuthbert?
Thanks very much, Chair. Chair, I just have one comment to make, and that's in relation to the discussion that the DG and I had in our portfolio committee meeting last week, where he outright rejected the idea of a free trade agreement with China, particularly citing the fact that it would decimate the textiles industry and the manufacturing industry. However, the current arrangements in place have done nothing to stop illegal imports. At least the free trade agreement would allow us mechanisms of recourse through a dispute resolution mechanism, and also allow for some quid pro quo concessions on the part of a big trading partner like China. So, you know, the evidence doesn't point to the statement that was made by him, and I'd like to understand whether or not the department has actually investigated, you know, potential concessions we could have in those industries, and whether or not it doesn't actually make more sense for them to take it from that point of view, considering the fact that they would now actually have something enforceable that they could then, you know, send
Can I, Secretariat, get more of members that are still wanting to take, maybe comments or questions?
I only have Ms. Mwatse's hand at the moment, Chair, in addition to the hands that you already had, Chair.
Okay. Honorable Mwatse.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me also join other members by welcoming Honorable Ngamashe as a member of our TEC. Chairperson, on localization, the challenge of lack of compliance with localization is compounded by lack of capacity to enforce it. Then how will the stakeholder ensure compliance with localization? Thank you very much.
Chair, Mr. Mbuyane, Chair.
Okay. Honorable Mbuyane.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, for the opportunity and thanks for the presentation. It's very much informative. Mine, I think, it's only three issues. One will be the reimagined industrial strategy and also the economic recovery and the reconstruction plan. Also the development of master plan. I just want to check whether the three components are part of the strategy of government in terms of the recovery plan. The other one, Chairperson, we have four master plans. I can see in terms of financial resources that are allocated in each of the master plans. The struggling one, which is the sugar master plan, has been allocated 1 million, and which is, to me, is a serious challenge. I don't know if you can get clarity why is that happening. The other one, Chairperson, in terms of the challenges, is the correct pricing and the under-invoicing, which has been raised. How are we going to correct it moving forward vis-a-vis the duty rebate and the, also on the tax charge? Chair, maybe on the automatics, it's a question of the agreement with Transnet. I don't know whether it covered a certain portion or it covered the entire South Africa in terms of the agreement that they made with the Transnet of the locomotives and so forth. Chair, let us welcome the Toyota hybrid model. We definitely wish to check as to how it's going to work in South Africa, because this one is working with the, also its electricity and petrol. So how are we going to work? Because now we still have challenges in terms of electricity. I don't know how we're going now. We don't have electricity, we have load shedding. We still have to put more electrical in terms of the automotive. Where are we going to get all the stuff? Thank you, Chairperson, for the opportunity.
Secretary, if there's any other member, you can indicate.
No other hands, Chair.
Okay. Okay. Let me just say, before one actually goes back to the team, DG, and the team and the deputy minister, so I think the big point, or the point which is actually quite important, is that we have four master plans ready for implementation, because I think the point we can actually then raise with the DG is to say we will need to find the best way as the portfolio committee on how best we carry our oversight in the implementation of the master plans. But I think the unique part as well of issues that are important that we need to really look at, there will be an issue of industrialization. When you look at how we have engaged in different platforms in the country, you know, there is a point where when you look at industrialization, in some cases it's actually said industrialization through localization. So you actually have to do more work, but you actually have to ensure that it's linked to what is actually local. But further, I think it's also something that we can be able to look at when we implement the issue relating will ensure sustainability and growth, the issue of development of the small medium enterprise. And on the same discussions, there is actually an issue of saying when we actually carry out and implement the master plans, will it actually be able to contribute to the informal economy of the country? It does actually put DTIC in a position that it won't be what is done by the department. It will be a point on how the department works with other departments, because obviously, you know, in terms of increasing of local production, one actually is quite, happy that at least we can look at the DTIC linking with the national treasury. The big issue will be the designation of products for local procurement, because that's one actually big issue that we'll have to ensure it's secured and protected, so that at least when we actually create stability on our space, we also grow production in the area that actually ensure that when we procure, it's procurement of local productions, which we actually have sort of managed as department or interdepartment, like the issue of the DGI and National Treasury. Designation of products for local procurement is actually quite crucial. So I thought maybe I can take those few comments before I call back to the DG. And DG, I'm sure you will be able to pick up and get your team to be able to actually maybe respond or contribute further on the discussion we're having. But on our part, big issue will be looking at implementation. Since we have actually got today confirmation of the master plans being ready, and on our part, I think we'll need to move to the next point of making sure that we get the work done or we ensure implementation of the master plans as presented to our portfolio committee today. Can I go back to you, DG? If ever there are no further members, and then let's actually maybe pick up on some of the comments and questions from members, and then ask you to actually, on the issue of implementation, just to help us have sense of how the portfolio committee should be able to focus in terms of ensuring that there is implementation of these actually, you know, wonderful initiatives of the master plans which we have actually concluded. There are those outstanding master plans, we have noted that, but for those we have just reported about, we will actually have to ensure that we see how they are implemented. DG, can I invite you? Secretary, I'm sure there's no other member wanting to raise a point. If not, can I go back to the DG? Director General October, Secretary? So I'm sure you actually you will find there's no one else leaving out. We can move to the DG.
No,
yes.
No.
Okay. DG, floor is yours.
Thank you, Chair. And again, I think on your point you're making about implementation, what we've built into the master plans is oversight and monitoring. So there is an executive oversight committee which is chaired by the minister. And that is to ensure and comprises all the players who drafted the master plan, and they meet at a minimum on a quarterly basis to ensure implementation. But I take your point that we will be really laser focused on implementation. Chair, there's quite a lot of penetrating questions and some complex debates, which I think I'm going to only just touch on, but it looks like we're going to have more intensive debates, and some of the members will have to assist with that. But Chair, starting with Honorable Tring, I think he correctly raises two issues, the one about SMMEs being the backbone, the middle stunt of any successful economy, and then especially the question of beneficiation and localization. So on the SMMEs, so some sectors are very the majority, for example, if you take the clothing, textile, and footwear sector, except for textile, but clothing manufacture and footwear is dominated by SMMEs. So most of the beneficiaries of the clothing master plan are SMMEs. And then if you take the auto sector and others, as you know, the assemblers are the big OEMs, and they only employ about 30,000 people. But the big part of participation on SMMEs in the components, making all the tens of thousands of small components that goes into the vehicle. So that is why you will see localization is tied to SMME development, because it's in the downstream sectors that you build your SMMEs. And so therefore you will see our emphasis on local content, localization, 65% in autos. That means you develop more labor intensity, but also more SME intensity and so on. But it is a point that we make as a condition, is SME development and black economic empowerment. Chair, on the question of beneficiation, I think, as I indicated before, we are working very intensely on the platinum value chain, because as you know, we've moved from being a predominantly gold economy to where our really dominant mineral is platinum. So there's extensive work being done by ourselves, Department of Innovation and Technologies, doing on developing that, and we can give more details around that. But I agree fully that our weaknesses as an economy has been that we've been exclusively focused on our mining endowment and then the export of raw materials. That is the basis of South Africa's colonization. That is the basis of the apartheid system. It was based on gold mining exports and not the development of the manufacturing sector as a whole. So therefore, in a sense, beneficiation, which is really just another word for industrialization, is the essence of all of these plans. I think Honorable McPherson obviously raised very complex issues that I don't think we're going to resolve it here. But I think I must say I obviously know that his contribution is always very, very sound, and we learn a lot from it. But on the issue of the social compact, I think we must distinguish means and ends. The end goal is, as Honorable McPherson stated, we want more employment, we want more value add, we want more competitive and lower priced products. That is the end. The means is through the social compact. So you can either have a top-down approach, as they did in East Asia, where government just decides what's the plan and then it imposes it on the private sector, the trade unions and so on. We obviously, as a democratic society, we have decided on the social compact approach, which means in the planning process, like in Germany, where workers co-manage companies, we have an inclusive approach, which is we involve the private sector in the actual drafting of the master plan. We involve the trade unions, because they are the ones who have to carry out the master plan. So social compact is just the means. But the end is fully in line with what Honorable McPherson, and I agree fully with him on that as being the goals and so on. Chair, he is correct about the dominance of big companies in South Africa, because as you know, we have a racially monopoly economy and is dominated by those businesses. But the purposes of industrialization is to expand the secondary sector and to bring in SMMEs, black players, and so on. So I think we agree that we cannot have a sector dominated by a business. Also, businesses are against localization. They want to import everything, and they are against SMMEs and especially black SMMEs. So I agree we can't have big business with their narrow interests dominating, but that's why we have a collective process. We involve the small players in the master plan process. For example, in the sugar master plan, we've got black cane growers who are well organized. They are integral part of the master plan in other sectors as well. We agree that it is not a silver bullet, and it is just one tool in your overall toolbox. And I think Honorable McPherson then talks about the problem about aren't we raising the price for consumers? Aren't we in the sense, aren't there negative effects of loads you can get from China and so on? Chair, as I indicated, with industrial policy and trade policy is the most complex part of economic policy because there are invariably trade-offs. In order to protect the producers, you need to raise the tariff. But if you raise the tariff too high, you raise the cost for consumers. So industrial policy is about finding the correct balance between the interests of the producer and the interests of the consumer and so on. And also between upstream and downstream. You must balance the interests of the textile, capital intensive, and the downstream labor intensive clothing. So, that is why you have the master plan process, is to find that happy medium between the competing interests of different players. I'll ask the colleagues who know more about this, Stanley, and others about the rebate, and I think they can engage a bit more intelligently on that debate. And I know Honorable McPherson is also has some expertise in the clothing and textile sector. Chair, the other issue is about what we've done to create export markets. As you know, we've just won a successful breakthrough in the UAE and in the Middle East with regards to our poultry exports. So for the first time in our history, we are exporting poultry products now into big markets or lucrative markets like the UAE and others. As you know, Europe is very protectionist, and they really they put in place lots of trade barriers, but we are working on breaking down those trade barriers so that we can our white meat can also get into Europe. I think absolutely correct about dysfunctional municipalities. As we always indicated, a weak state, a weak local government, we must have a mixed economy. If you want to create a strong market, you must have a strong state. And small states are weak states and dysfunctional. So therefore, we're always saying let's have a mixed economy, which is a strong state and a strong market. On electrical vehicles, we'll go into that, but we do note the point. So we for example, have got Toyota already starting to produce the first hybrids in South Africa. The other OEMs, Ford and others, will also be rolling out OEMs. There's some doing electrical vehicles and so on. And part of the master plan is an electric vehicle strategy. And we will be tabling soon in Cabinet with the Department of Transport an electric vehicle strategy. Honorable Yako is right about the proof is in the pudding and the implementation, but as I indicated, we are seeing not the full results yet, but we are seeing all the green shoots. For example, 60 billion of investment, over 10,000 jobs in line in terms of the auto master plan, breakthroughs in increased production in poultry, increased production in sugar, and as I said, massive exports of PPE from the clothing industry to the continent and so on. We're having a surplus of 100 billion trade surplus for a long time. So there are the green shoots we've seen. And then I think Honorable Cuthbert, as I indicated, I think I would agree with him that this matter should be debated and should, and as I said, I've just given our current views on the matter. But as I said, we are open for debate and discussion on that thing. But just to note, the United States is even moving away from bilateral free trade area. They burnt their fingers when they went into those early free trade agreements with NAFTA, Mexico, South Korea, wiped out different parts of the U.S. manufacturing. So even the U.S. is reassessing this question of free trade. So as I say, we just say be careful, but we are open to a proper debate and discussion on that matter, and we can get our trade division ambassador Karim and others to come and present on this matter. And Honorable Muatsi, you're absolutely right about the lack of compliance. We've put in place a mechanism because to monitor compliance of people importing and not localizing as per the designations. And we have a hotline, and we act strongly once we are made aware of any breaches. So please let us know if there's any breaches anybody knows about, and we will take it out. And then on Mboyani, I think the colleagues will explain, but we are aligned to the recovery plan, because as you know, one component of the recovery plan is localization and industrialization, and that's how we align the master plans to the recovery plan. And then colleagues, I think Tandi works with Transnet every day, and especially with the new CEO, Portia Darby, who's a former colleague and who used to knows industrial policy and DTIC policy very well. They work together, and she can give you an explanation around the Transnet collaboration we have. And then, as I indicated, Honorable Chair, we do have an oversight mechanism to ensure implementation. And I can hand over then to Tandi and the other colleagues. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks, DG. Tandi.
Thanks, DG. I think you have covered a number of questions. I think maybe let's start off with the Honorable Mbuyani's question around the connection between the Reimagined Industrial Strategy, the Economic Recovery Plan, and the Master Plan. As the DG has already alluded, at the core of all of this is that we want to reindustrialize, we want to create new job opportunities, we want to increase growth, improve competitiveness. And I think if you look at the Economic Recovery Plan, it identifies almost about 50 commitments, of which one of them is the Master Plan, which I think points to the point that Honorable McPherson was making about whether we are saying the Master Plan is a silver bullet. That's not the message that we are bringing on the table. What we are bringing on the table is that when we work collectively and in a partnership with the private sector and labor, we are able to achieve the overall objectives of job creation, growth, employment, inclusivity, and so forth. So I think across all the master plans, there's very clear clear outline of what is the objectives we are trying to address with the master plans. And therefore, we're going to a process of agreeing what are the means and the instruments that we're going to be utilizing to actually close the gap. So on the issues of under-invoicing, I think previously we made a point about an intergovernmental agency working group that has been led by SAR to look at how do we deal with the issues of under-invoicing across the economy. And I think they have done a lot of great work clothing and textiles as a test case, and hence I indicated in the presentation that there's been a heightened focus on how we're going to deal with the issues in CTDC to make sure that we are able to ensure that we do deal with the issues of under invoicing. I think the point that I made in the presentation on the evaluation method, that globally in the customs process, you normally have about 7 steps that you go through. In South Africa, we only have about 1 or 2. So part of the process is also learning in the process and tweaking our instruments to make sure that they are able to respond to what the industry is also complaining about. And I think the partnership between industry and customs, because it's not always clear that customs has got the capacity to really want to do the correct identification of the product, secondly, to do the correct classification of the products under the tariff book. Hence, we are across a number of master plans, there's a commitment from business to also assist SARS to develop that capability and work in collaboration with SARS to really ensure that we are able to identify products before they enter our shop. I think on the issues of compliance on local content and the designation, I think it's a point we have come to the committee to talk about on many occasions. One of the elements that I think can really assist one is that in the current Super PFA, there's already a process, I think it's Section 14, that allows for some remedies around one, this misdeclaration by the bidders. Secondly, if the bidders are found not to have been meeting the local content requirements. But as DG is indicating, we are a democratic economy, so bidders are first allowed to make a
representation to the procuring entity and find out what could have been the problem of the non-compliance and the remedies thereof. But I think core to it is that I think the opportunities around the procurement bill that is currently being introduced through Parliament, how do we really introduce punitive measures in there to make sure that we do really hold officials and accounting officers accountable for the non-compliance with local content instruments. Because, I mean, for us to be able to know, to really industrialize, we really need to look at how do we really build aggregate demand. And aggregate demand will come from both the private sector and the public sector. I think on the issue of the rebate, DG, if I am allowed, if I can ask Mahindra to maybe help Honorable McPherson around the process of the rebate system, as I requested at the beginning of the meeting, that if the questions are a bit technical, can I request our technical team to assist? I think the question that Honorable McPherson is requesting is the simplicity around the rebate system, the understanding thereof, and how do the different players in the supply chain make use of the rebate. I think on that point, DG, can I maybe request Mahindra just to come in on that one point?
Sorry, go ahead. Good morning. Thank you. Good morning, honorable members, and thank you for allowing the engagement. On the rebate system, it was after about 35 years that the joint submission from the industry, organized labor, manufacturing, and textiles was submitted to the International Trade Administration Commission. And in that submission, we created the complexities necessary for this rebate as it impacts the fiscus quite heavily. And as you would notice in the master plan itself, the signatories to the master plan are the only parties that the rebate is applicable to. So in order for industry and members from outside to get this rebate, they would have to sign on to the master plan and facilitate the agreements of offtake and the commitments that are in the master plan, such as localization, ensuring compliance in the industry, and all the other necessary steps to improve the CTIL sector. So the complexity is necessary so that we don't allow abuse of this rebate in the system. Thanks. Also, we have a specific team dedicated to liaise with new members that are signing on to the master plan, and that team kind of unpacks the complexities to them when they're joining and signing on, if they're going through independent route or via the associations. Thank you.
Chair, just just in conclusion then, Chair, I think Honorable McPherson has also asked about the UK decision to only allow electrical vehicles after 2030. And I think, as I indicated to him, we've got the matter in hand. We have a working group of the Auto Master Plan, which includes the OEMs and component manufacturers around an electrical vehicle strategy. So, as indicated, we did understand that, and as you know, our former patriot from Pretoria, Elon Musk, has completely revolutionized the vehicle industry with the production of Tesla and the electric vehicles. So it looks like all the OEMs are now moving towards electric vehicles. So that is a now common cause. So there's going to be lots of competition in this market. Also, it looks like the gateway will be the hybrid vehicle, because as you know, until you have the full electricity infrastructure rolled out, plug-ins and so on, you're going to have to also have some option for people to use the petrol when they're not using the electrical part of it. So that is why, as you indicated, Toyota, Ford, a number of OEMs are moving towards the hybrid. And then there is, all of them have in their medium-term plan is to then go fully electrical as well. So our OEMs are fully geared to that. As you know, we produce 300,000 of our vehicles is for local, and 300,000 is export. And also for some, like into the UK, Ford, and others is 70%, and the bulk of the exports to Europe is into our traditional market, the UK. So we do have that, and that's why I indicated, in addition to that, we are working. We have to also develop our own infrastructure as well, so that South Africans, and as the price falls, more South Africans will also move to electric vehicles. But currently, the cost structure is prohibitive. But we do have a full-time working group on the electric vehicles, and as I indicated, we will be shortly be rolling out with the other departments on electrical vehicle strategy for the country. Thanks, Chair.
Okay. Let me go back to the Secretariat.
Chair?
Secretariat?
Chair, if I may, Chair, Mr. Cuthbert and Mr. Mulder has raised their hands, Chair.
Okay. Let's actually then check Honorable Cuthbert.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just one final comment regarding what DG October said. Last week he referred to the primary steel making capability as a core tenant of the erstwhile President of the U.S., Mr. Trump's, localization policy. And this week we're hearing about, the U.S.'s strategy, negotiating trade deals. Now, it's all fine and well to look to leading economies, but surely we need to chart our own path and we should make decisions that take our interests into account. And I don't think that that's an adequate defense, and I would like to ask that we formalize this request for Ambassador Karim to come in and, provide us with any research that they have done on the possibility of, enhancing our trade relations with our BRICS partners. I think the last one we received in October last year was rather scant, and I'd like to see a little bit more meat, particularly in respect to BRICS. So maybe that I would like to propose as a way forward. We do obviously do have the master plans on steel to be actually following through as well, if we look at the details. So thanks very much, Honorable Cuthbert. Can we pick up Honorable Mulder?
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Dr. October, members. I've asked Minister Ibrahim Patel a couple of months ago a question about localization. Of course, the Freedom Front Plus welcomes localization. We value the self-determination of South Africa, but also more self-sustainability of regions. Minister Patel's answer to me was that South Africa is a unitary state, and that the only way materializing regional economies would be by the way of districts, municipalities, and metros. But the question I want to ask is, don't you think that we are underestimating the value and the possible contribution that regional economies could make towards job creation? For instance, if you go to a chain store, let's name it Checkers, for instance, the goods that you can get on the shelves there usually comes from clover or dairy products, etc., or one of those huge dairies, and even imported from Ireland or wherever, Turkey, etc. My question would be, wouldn't it be advisable to support local economies more and more? Can't there be somewhere provided for in the master plan to promote regional economies to enhance job creation? Thank you, Chair.
Mr. McPherson,
Chair.
Oh, okay.
McPherson. Thanks very much. DG, thanks for correcting me, 2030. The thing is this, is that, as you said, it takes 6 years or so for a new model, in terms of preparation and so on and so forth. So unless, Mercedes and BMW, which produce single variant vehicles in South Africa, are planning for that now, you know, we're going to sort of get towards 2027, 2028, and then sort of start having that discussion. Is that discussion taking place now with our automotive manufacturers? Because if it's not, I would suggest that we need to start having that discussion sooner rather than later. On master plans, so, I mean, I hear what you're saying, and I, you know, for one moment don't want anyone to construe, you know, that we don't want local manufacturers to do well, but there has to be a balance in terms of, you know, in terms of what protection the government offers, and a lot of these master plans hinge on tariff protection, against businesses' unwillingness to be competitive. So, you know, while I agree with you, and I think that you and I share the same sentiment on how big business treats small business, that and that's by and large because big business has always had a very special and cozy relationship with government, and so they get whatever they want. But that's always to the detriment of small business. But if these tariff protection measures continue to protect uncompetitive industries like steel, like poultry, they are always going to be losers at the other end of the scale. So in steel, the losers are always the downstream manufacturers where there's 500,000 jobs. The losers in poultry are small-scale farmers and consumers that have to pay 29 rand per kilo more for chicken than they should if those businesses were more competitive, but they don't have to be because they have, you know, 80% duties on chicken, and they just have. And if you have that sort of business, why would you need to bother with actually being, you know, exporting anything overseas? So, you know, there's always trade-offs into these things. And I really want to implore the DTR, because I'm quite sure that it hasn't been done, because no one said it has been done, that there must be an understanding as to what the cost trade-offs are for the economy in terms of costs for consumers, and also towards inflation. Because I can assure you right now that as steel prices increase because of uncompetitive monopolies like ArcelorMittal, and as food costs increase because of JSE-listed billionaire companies that can just put up the price of chicken as they wish, that will have a detrimental effect on our economy one way or another. And that needs to be fully understood by the DTR going forward. And that is a request I would make. And I obviously don't expect the results in a week, but I think that those results are really important and should be attached to each master plan going forward. Thanks.
Secretariat, I'm sure we have covered most of the hands you've got. If I can, then I would ask the DDG if ever there's no other comments or hands coming up. And
no,
then
I
ask the DG.
We can proceed here.
Okay. Let's actually have a DDG Pele on some of the comments or questions, and then let's actually have the DG, and I will actually then invite the Deputy Minister Majola to actually then take the concluding remarks. DDG Pele.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. Just 2 points on my side. I think the issue around the trade-offs, I think is well taken, and hence in each and every master plan we talk about the appropriate tariff or trade support measures that are appropriate to support the industry, but at the same time not have the cost effect to the economy. I think we do recognize that, and we continue to have those debates within the individual work streams of the various master plans, just to ensure that we are, as we are developing our industries, we take into account what is the cost effect on the economy. And coupled with that, I think this is why we have introduced a rebate system on the clothing and textiles, leather and footwear sector, so that we begin in tariffs makes sense in the short to medium term that could really allow us for a greater value addition downstream. So I think on the issues of steel, I would just maybe, with the DG's permission, that we park those discussions, and when we come to the committee to report on the work we are doing on the steel master plan, we have debates around those issues that Honourable McPherson is raising. As DG alluded to, these are very complex industrial policy matters that requires really careful thought and architecture in order to balance the interests within the value chains and ensure that we are able to support the greater goal in terms of industrialization. The one bullet point that maybe I didn't respond to earlier on from Honourable Mbuyani around what work are we doing with Transnet. I think on the auto side in particular, the task team is actually looking at how do we improve logistics, that is cost of rail, cost of ports for storage and so forth of vehicles, so that we are able to also sustain our export competitiveness. This is very much an auto conversation to ensure that we're also able to provide the correct rolling stock. As we are increasing production, as I made the point in the presentation, that increasing production in value, in numbers of vehicles we are producing, would require additional rolling stock on the Transnet side, so that we work close in tandem with one another, that we don't end up with cars being produced in length and they are not able to get to the coast because of the logistical issues. So it's a very much an auto conversation, but we are having broader conversations with Transnet generally to look at what is the cost of logistics across the economy, where can we make the right investment in order to support the kind of productive capacity and landscape that we'd like to see going forward. So the nuances in our logistics requirements will differ from one sector to another, and the kind of support that is needed from Transnet side. So we are having, for every master plan that we are implementing, we are having those kind of very specific conversations with Transnet just to ensure that we don't, agglomerate issues and we end up not really addressing issues sectorally as required. Obviously, on the other side, Transnet is playing a bigger role on the localization strategy. We are also having discussions with them around the maintenance of the current fleet of locals. How best can we really ensure that we integrate the SMEs, the second, third tiers into this process, now that the locals have been delivered by the OEMs, and I guess they are now owned by Transnet as a group. So how do we use that to actually also create new capacity on the manufacturing side to ensure that we are able to support our maintenance program? We are also having discussions with them around how do they also prepare themselves for the continental free trade area. As you know, they are a center of competency in wagon manufacturing. We can really export a lot of wagons coming from our factories here in South Africa, especially Transnet Engineering. So we need to have a more of a broader conversation with our sister departments on how do we really support a greater export effort on the TE side that can really help us to pull through the different components, axles, wheels, the steel, plates, because there's greater value in actually exporting rolling stock such as wagons to the continent, and the value that can really accrue to the industry from a supply chain perspective. So, Chair, I will end it there, and since I'm not coming back to the platform, and thank the committee for the opportunity, and also continue to make the plea that on the issues around compliance with localization, we do require the support of the committee itself to help us to really marshal with our own sister departments, our spheres of government, to make sure that we are able to actually use procurement as strategic as we'd like it to use as an instrument of industrial policy in order to really increase aggregate demand. I think we have seen good results out of PPE, but also very bad results out of PPE, which I think can be lessons for us going forward. But we really need the committee to really help us to champion that process, especially on a public procurement side of things. Thanks, Chair.
I support you on the part of saying the master plans are ready for implementation. I heard it very well. DG, if I can invite you, closing comments, and then we'll actually go for the Deputy Minister Majola. DG?
Chair, as you can see, the talent in the A-team and Tandi's response, she has declared me redundant and she's dealt with all the issues much better than I could. So I would leave it at that and say we will then have a presentation around our strategic trade policy and our strategic approach to tariffs and to free trade agreements. So let's have that discussion. Thank you.
Okay. Deputy Minister Majola.
Thank you very much, Chairperson Nkosi, and thanks to the DG and the DDG and Mahindra for the responses. Honourable members, thank you very much for your very useful comments and I think very useful insights. So there will be of benefit to us as we continue doing our work. So what is the way forward from now? So, Chair, I think in terms of the next steps, so we're going to act to ensure that we can finalize in the next few weeks the two master plans that we referred to earlier on, ensure that we accelerate the implementation of the already finalized master plans. And as Honorable Mulder pointed out, our approach is going to be at the level of implementation. It's going to be aligned to the district development model, and this is why putting emphasis on the centrality of regional economies. In the next few weeks during the course of March, we'll meet again with all our 9 provinces, the MECs, to have a discussion that focuses on implementation and how we integrate the new ideas since the last time we met into their own economic reconstruction and recovery plans, to show that, as Honorable Fling points out, that there's a proper alignment between the different spheres of government. And on the other hand, Honorable Fring makes asks the question about intergovernmental relations. In the SONA debate, Minister Patel did point out that we're working with the Department of Mineral Resources and Energy on significantly making changes in how we do business in mining and focusing on the beneficiation. The earlier days had seen both our minister, the Minister of Energy and Mineral Resources, and the Minister of Public Enterprises engaging with industry to deal with the immediate challenges that the industry faces. So as we move forward, we will now have to focus on deepening localization and deepening beneficiation. Honorable McPherson, I think DG has responded to the important question you raised. I fully agree with you that the matters of focusing on competitiveness, employment, and so on and so on are very important, inclusivity are very important as our desired outcomes. So as DG says, he asked the question, so what's the means to get there? How the chairperson, I really think that it is going to be important that we further deepen our approach to social compacting in South Africa. if we are to shift from the path we have followed so far in economic reconstruction and recovery, we have to deepen social contracting so that, as Honorable McPherson was saying, that the big players in different parts of the economy can work in their own direction if we're not coordinating as labor, as government, as business. So he did point out what he calls the big money-making machines in the economy. So we need to ensure that if our economy is to succeed, we deepen social compacting. We haven't worked together sufficiently in the past as different social partners. As DG was pointing out, other nations such as Germany had built very successful modern manufacturing economies on the back of social compacting. It is something that I really believe that we need to continue to deepen so that we can achieve inclusivity, we can achieve higher rates of growth, we can achieve higher rates of employment, and so on and so on. On the dysfunctionality of our municipalities and the challenges of infrastructure, and unfortunately the recent rainy season has caused more damage to the municipal infrastructure. It is something that the honorable member knows that is on the side of government through Investment South Africa. We focus it as what President would call a whirlwind. We're focusing on bulk infrastructure development, focusing on our municipalities. So when we attended to that, so we've got to make sure that we build capacities and capabilities of municipalities to ensure that they can maintain their infrastructure. Honorable Yako, you quite spot on, and Chairperson Nkosi agrees with you that going forward, we want to see more results, we want to see more action, so that when we come back to the portfolio committee in 3 months' time or so, we can focus on the actions that we have been taking, and we can be able to give you a report back on progress we're making. Honorable Casper, I think DG has already agreed that he will now set in motion a process to ensure that Ambassador Karim and the team can come to the portfolio committee so that we can discuss these very important matters of trade, so that you can take forward your debate with regard to matters of free trade with China. Honorable Mwase, I think DDG Pele has emphasized on this. The problem of lack of compliance is a very big one across the economy, not just in the area of the portfolio of the DTIC. So it's an issue that we have to work together with members of parliament to ensure that where there are blockages, where there's lack of compliance, those issues can be pointed out and we can work together. And after I close, Honorable Mbuyani, Minister Patel has spoken a lot of the problem of under-invoicing. It's a big leakage to our economy. So it is something that you've got to address. As he puts it, he has had to look his counterparts in the eye with regard to this, in particular counterpart, to ensure that this matter can be addressed. It's a big issue that through SARS we've got to address, the team that's led by SARS, but also in conversations with our trading partners. And lastly, Chairperson, I agree with you with regard to our focus on implementation. So we will, during the course of this week, I will visit the Western Cape, in particular the Saldanha part of the Western Cape, so that on the ground, we can make sure that the different spheres of government work together to ensure that we focus on implementation. Thanks very much for your time, Chairperson, and thanks very much for the very warm comments from the members of the Portfolio Committee, and thanks for guiding the ship, Chairperson Nkosi.
Thank you very much, Deputy Minister Majola. Maybe you can go back to the Secretariat. Secretariat, I thought maybe what might be helpful, having actually thanked the DTIC and the Deputy Minister, that you can actually make a reflection of our meeting tomorrow. We're meeting tomorrow, 24th February, Wednesday at 9. If you can just speak to that as the next meeting we should have, Secretariat.
Chair, we are dealing tomorrow with starting the process of shortlisting candidates so nominated for the position of Chairperson of the Board of the National Appeals Commissions. Members have received all the CVs in December already, so tomorrow we will start with the process of shortlisting of candidates for that position, Chair. The meeting will start at 9 o'clock on the platform.
Thank you very much. I think for the honourable members and Deputy Minister, DG, DDG and the whole team, thanks very much for your participation and involvement. Can I actually then say, can we reconvene as the Portfolio Committee tomorrow at 9 on the basis of the program as we have adopted it? The meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much.
Thank
can
you.
We meet tomorrow. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
Right.
Thank you, Chair.